I'm Brandi Cruz, coming up today on Undivided. Using no nuance whatsoever, Governor Bob Ferguson seems to wholesale condemn the enforcement of federal immigration laws. Plus, even Governor Gavin Newsom opposes targeting the rich for taxation, or so he says. And Washington high school athlete Frances Stout will join us from D.C. to talk about her experience during yesterday's historic Supreme Court hearing. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our little show for just $5 a month. Help us do the work we do. Go to UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. If you're joining us live today, I know there's some reports of widespread cell phone outages and internet outages. We seem fine for now. Knock on wood. But if we go off the air, you know, it's probably China. So we'll see. I don't know who's trying to mess with the infrastructure. All right. Governor Bob Ferguson, Washington State, had his State of the State address. Talked about some things we expected. I will say it was kind of boring. He's not the kind that really riles you up in any way. But a lot of virtue signaling. I would say virtue signaling really over all else. He, of course, talked about the millionaires tax, the tax that they're trying to put lipstick on in order to sell it to the populace. They can eventually get an income tax through on everyone. But here's what he said.
In addition to these challenges, we are facing an affordability crisis affecting Washingtonians across our state. Our regressive upside-down tax code does not help. Our system takes too much in taxes from hardworking families and not enough from the wealthy. Washington families whose income is in the bottom 20% pay a whopping 13.8% of their total income in taxes, while those whose income is in the top 1% pay only 4.1% of their income. That's not fair, that's not right, and that's why I'm calling for something truly historic, a millionaire's tax.
And Democrats clapped for like 30 seconds. So we're not going to bore you with that. If I had to give a state of the state, you know, they always, if it's a, you know, state of the union or a state of the state, they always assign what the state of the state or the state of the union is. Mine would be delusional. Delulu. The state of the state is delusional because, of course, everything is Donald Trump's fault. This affordability crisis we're in. Oh, it's not the party that's been in power almost exclusively for 40 years. No, that's not us. It's the current occupant of the White House. Totally delusional. But let's talk about this tax issue a little bit. So, as you know, I was in Olympia last week, got a chance to ask questions of the governor about the millionaires tax. And, you know, I really am of the belief that this is their effort to get an income tax on the books by any means necessary. And they think that Washington voters, if you start it off as a tax on the rich, voters will approve it and they will push back on it. And then time will go by and they'll eventually be able to make it an income tax on everyone. And the people who did this will be out of office by then, so it won't be a big deal. But I had asked Governor Bob Ferguson about this belief, you know, I and others have, that this really is just a path to an income tax across the board. Here's what he said.
You said, I will not support an income tax on people who make less than $1 million a year.
Correct.
Is that this year or any year?
I don't support it less than $1 million, period.
So now until...
Can't answer any more clear than that.
I don't support it. So you could answer it more clear than that. You could say, I will never support an income tax on people who make less than $1 million a year. So he's saying that, right? Now, I still don't believe him. Why would I believe him? He ran on being a fiscal hawk, and then he passed the largest tax increase in state history into law. He's changed his ways many, many times and claimed he's for one thing and then done another. So I don't believe him at all, but I also think that there is something more strategic happening behind the scenes, which is he knows that at the point where they decide to make it an income tax on everyone, he either won't be in office anymore or he'll have already won his second term and therefore changing his mind won't matter. I mean, Governor Jay Inslee, when he first ran, remember he said he won't raise taxes or pass new taxes, and it took him like a year to break that promise. And so the way that this is all going to go, the millionaires tax, they will absolutely pass it this year. Then there'll be the legal challenges and then there'll be the voter initiative. They don't really expect to start collecting revenue from the millionaires tax probably for 3 to 4 years. So let's do the math. 3 to 4 years, you're looking at 2028, 2029. So if they can push that to 2030, I mean, Governor Bob Ferguson will be in office on his second term because nobody else can beat Democrats in the state of Washington. And so let's say that they decide to reduce it then. Well, there's no political consequence for him at that point because he's on his way out. I don't think that he'll seek a third term because it was really unpopular when Jay Inslee did that. But I'm just thinking ahead, as all of us should. But then there's this other wrinkle that it's not just me, or it's not just the Republican Party or conservatives or people who don't like or trust Governor Ferguson who believe that the millionaire tax will become an income tax on everyone. As we've said, Democrats have always supported an income tax. They've said for decades, that's the way to fix our broken tax system. So it doesn't make any sense for them just to all of a sudden say, never mind, well, what we've wanted for decades and decades. No, we don't want that anymore. It's just a tax on millionaires. And there's a few sane Democrats who are willing to admit that, like we played this clip on the show last week, State Rep Larry Springer, who is a Democrat, who was asked about this, and he said, yeah, don't trust us.
Why should the public, you know, while it's millionaires now, why should we believe Democrats? Why should the public assume that it's not going to be an income tax on them by 2031?
You shouldn't.
You shouldn't. Okay, that's a Democrat saying that. You shouldn't. He says it. I don't trust him. And then there's the conversation I had with the budget leads on the Democratic side last week. So they, of course, are all on board with this idea of a millionaire's tax, but they are less willing, as Governor Bob Ferguson did, to commit to not making it an income tax on everyone. So here's my exchange again with the Democratic budget lead on the Senate side, June Robinson, and the Democratic budget lead on the House side, Representative Tim Ormsby.
He literally said, a member of your own caucus, of your own party, that Washingtonians should not trust you guys if you try to suggest that you only want to tax the income of millionaires. So do you only want to tax the income of millionaires, or are you willing to admit that eventually the plan is to tax everyone's income?
I don't have any plans. We're not counting on the millionaires portion of it. As has been described, there has to be a bill. It has to be scrutinized. It has to be marked up, you know, and given a fiscal note. So let's focus on the policy that's in front of us, not speculate about what that means in the future. I do not have plans on that money being of help in the short term. As Senator Robinson explained, it wouldn't come in to be a benefit to the state until at least 2 years, if not longer. So it is not a short-term fix. So this whole camel's nose under the tent slippery slope argument is not relevant to the policy that will be before the legislature. That would come in the future, and it would go through the same scrutinizing and unpacking process that any legislation in any committee that has any fiscal impact whatsoever would go through that same scrutiny.
Can you respond to Representative Springer, again, your fellow caucus member's assertion that Washingtonians should not trust your caucus when they say that this is a millionaire's tax and not a road to an income tax?
I don't have any comment on that. That's the first I've heard of it. I know Representative Springer well. Happy to check in with him about that, but I had not heard that. And it's certainly not my opinion.
Senator Robinson, is the goal, and do you personally want an income tax in the state of Washington?
I want to do what the people of Washington support, which is taxing wealth. So I'm interested in a millionaire's tax.
So you wouldn't support down the road
lowering that threshold from a millionaire's tax to an income
today,
tax?
Today, I support a millionaire's tax.
Tomorrow? 5 years from now?
It's tomorrow and 5 years from now, and then the question will be relevant.
Yeah, I think that answers my question. If you're not willing to commit, you obviously want an income tax. You couldn't see it, but Senator Robinson rolled her eyes at me. It was like the most dramatic eye roll ever. It was like, ah. Oh. I was like, calm down. I'm just asking you to confirm that you want an income tax as your party has wanted for years and years and years. Not a trick question. So the fact that you have them being so skittish about it, and the fact that you have Bob Ferguson saying, oh, no, I don't support that, but he's broke his promises on a million things, then, you know, we know where this is heading. Let's not be stupid about it. A member of their own party says, we know where this is heading. Let's not be stupid about it. So a millionaire's tax today is an income tax on everyone tomorrow. A key point during Governor Ferguson's State of the State address had to do with immigration enforcement. Of course, he has to talk about what's happening in the other Washington while our state falls apart. And, you know, I at one point, I think I had more nuance on this issue, on the immigration enforcement issue. But then the other side completely lost nuance. And I said, OK, well, if you're not going to use nuance, then I'm not going to use nuance either. And they treat all immigration enforcement under Trump the same. As far as they're concerned, he's sending out masked agents without any identifiers out into communities, and they're kidnapping people off the street. And these people have done nothing wrong whatsoever. They use no nuance at all when they talk about it. Governor Bob Ferguson is no exception.
We cannot ignore the external challenges that create division and cost to our state, our families, and our communities. We need to be direct about what is happening in our country and our state with ICE. It's horrific, it's unjust, and it needs to stop now.
And that applause went on for quite a long time. But again, it's unjust and it needs to stop now. Specifically, what needs to stop now? What are you saying needs to stop now? Because ICE has, in Washington state, taken arrested and deported drug traffickers, murderers, child rapists, domestic abusers. There's an illegal here who killed a cop. So specifically, Governor Ferguson, what needs to stop now? Biden deported more people than Trump. Obama deported more people than Trump. So specifically, be specific. What needs to stop now? Reasonable people can disagree with aspects of President Trump's immigration enforcement. Sure, that's fine. But you guys have spun people up to believe that any immigration enforcement is cruel and evil and horrible, all because you just hate Donald Trump. And that's your one talking point that gets you out of trouble for all the other things that you're doing wrong. So no nuance whatsoever. And then the virtue signaling above all else. For instance, this has been talked about in other states. Now it's being introduced here. Senator Valdez, a Democrat, has a bill that would prohibit law enforcement from wearing masks, which is so stupid. It's total virtue signaling because they can't prevent. They have no say in how federal law enforcement agents do their jobs. They have no say whatsoever. So it's totally meaningless. But of course, Governor Ferguson had to virtue signal about the bill.
And Pastor, I'm ad-libbing a bit, but I think in your remarks, you mentioned anger at injustice as part of your remarks. I'm angry about this. And I think many of you are as well. As an American, I never thought I would see federal agents in masks jumping out of unmarked cars and grabbing people off our streets. This conduct will undoubtedly be remembered as a shameful period in our nation's history. Senator Valdez has a bill that prohibits law enforcement from wearing masks and requires identifying information to be clearly displayed on their uniform. Let's get that legislation to my desk immediately so I can sign that into law.
And it will do nothing. It will change nothing. What a waste of time. And they were just 5 years ago forcing all of us to wear masks for all sorts of things. And look, is it ideal for law enforcement agents who work for us, who work for the taxpayers? You know, I don't want a police state where every single law enforcement officer is out there masked up, you know, just their eyes showing or whatever it is for every single encounter that they have throughout the day. Of course, I don't want that. But you refuse to acknowledge the reason why these ICE agents are having to wear masks. Because of people like you. Because of rhetoric like the rhetoric that you're spewing. Because you go to Seattle and Tacoma on Capitol Hill and down Tacoma and people have posters up showing the faces of law enforcement agents, their families, and their home addresses. So yeah, they don't want to be doxxed and killed by left-wing lunatics. So maybe if you brought down the temperature a little bit, there wouldn't be a need for them to cover their faces. But again, not even your silly little bill is going to be able to change that. They'll continue to cover their faces. And frankly, I think that, you know, Seattle PD or people who respond to some of these left-wing riots and protests should be able to cover their faces, too. And now you're going to prevent them from doing so. So we're going to have more local law enforcement officers. They're the only ones who are going to be impacted by this bill. More of them are going to be doxxed and harassed and their pictures posted online. But Governor Bob Ferguson doesn't care because he hates cops. He has a long history of hating cops, of trying to politically prosecute police officers for murder and failing miserably, even with a jury plucked from one of the most progressive places on the planet. So it's just stupid. And as far as identifiers, yeah, I'm okay with that. I do believe. As long as it's not some sort of, like, undercover mission, obviously. Hopefully there's a carve out for that. Yeah, you should be easily identifiable as law enforcement, even if you cover your face. So people know that that's a law enforcement operation that's happening. That's ICE, or that's DHS, or that's Seattle PD, or State Patrol, or whatever it is. I'm fine with that. That's non-controversial. I don't believe anyone's arguing with that. So on the ICE front, we got something really interesting from a viewer that was sent to us yesterday. Maybe there are some people starting to revolt against this nonsense, because this anti-ICE sentiment and animus is just infiltrating every single aspect of far-left society. You know, like, got the teachers' unions out there encouraging, and didn't the students just walk out in Spokane yesterday? Students doing a walkout to protest ICE. And why wouldn't they? Because they've got left-wing teachers who are probably in classrooms ranting and raving up about President Donald Trump and his Gestapo. So there's this union in Seattle, the Professional and Technical Employees Local 17. What are they focused on? Well, not improving the lives of professional and technical employees who are members of Local 17. No, they're virtue signaling about immigration enforcement, which, again, has been going on for years and years and years and years and years and years and years in the United States of America with fairly limited problems. They put out this email to their members. We will not be divided by fear. Dear Protect 17 members. So it's a message from Executive Director of Protect 17, Karen Estevin. And they say, we are heartbroken and angry over the continued violence perpetrated by U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement against people being held without cause in detention centers across the U.S. and against peaceful protesters. Wow, what about the non-peaceful protesters, which that is quite a thing that's happening across the country, including here in Seattle. And anyway, the whole point of this email to its members is to encourage them to stand with La Resistencia to protest ICE deportation flights at the King County Airport. So they're telling their members and rallying their members in this email to go out to the King County Airport and protest lawful deportation flights. So we get this letter from a viewer who's a member of this Professional and Technical Employees Union, Local 17, and they've had enough. And this is the trigger for them. This email was the trigger for them to finally leave the union, which in Washington State, you have a right to leave the union. You can leave any of these unions and just say, sayonara, I no longer want my dues used for nonsense like this. Why would I want my dues used by you to go out and protest deportation flights? No, my dues are supposed to help improve my working conditions, help improve my pay, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So this is what this viewer, and he gave us permission to share this, Jason, said to this is an email to us, right? Not the one he sent the membership or the union. He said, I'm currently a City of Seattle employee of 24 years. I'm represented by Protect 17. Or should I say, they take my money in dues. Today, I received this email from the executive director that I want to share with you. And he details what we just detailed you about what the email says. He says, it's a call to action, which does not align with my values as a law-abiding conservative citizen. It is political. I don't believe a union should be political. This email creates division, and I believe it's telling people to disrupt legal actions being taken by our federal government. It is using dues to put together whistle kits that are so often used by the radical left to be annoying. Yeah, they're using these whistle kits to alert people to ICE and drown out other, peaceful protesters. He said, I don't want my dues being used for that. They seem to forget the First Amendment is about peaceful assembly. Being annoyed with whistles and bad information is not peaceful. I am withdrawing my membership from the union as of today. I believe unions have no say in this matter, and they act without consequences for their members. Today, I take a stand against this rhetoric from the left. Respectfully, Jason. We love that for you, Jason. We love that for you. And why would you, unless you're fully in with the radical left ideology, unless you're fully in and you support your dues being used to stop deportation flights and to protest ICE and to indoctrinate children, then I guess I understand why you're a member of the union. But at this point, any reasonable person, conservative or not conservative, should understand that unions in Washington State in particular, and yes, across the country, but I think we have some pretty far left unions here, that they're using your dues not to do necessarily what's in your best interest or to do what unions are supposed to be doing and what they were made to do, but to push the personal ideology of union leadership. And at this point, there should be no passive union involvement from people like that in the form of dues. If you're contributing and a dues-paying member of a union like the Washington Education Association or SEIU, or in this case, the Professional and Technical Employees Local 17 for City of Seattle workers, if you're a member of that union and you're paying dues, you are actively contributing to the decline of society. You are. You're actively contributing. You're making a choice to contribute to the decline of our state, to the decline of Seattle, to the decline of the United States of America, to the decline of our education system, to the decline of public safety and the rule of law. And so you have to make that decision and say, okay, I'm not going to do this passively anymore. It might become more difficult for me, you know, in terms of representation, but there are organizations. What is it? Opt out today. Is it optouttoday.com, optouttoday.org? One of the two. Where you can find a very easy way, a couple clicks of the button, to opt out of your union and to get help with whatever you lose from doing that. Legal help, all of those things. So you really, at the end of the day, just optout.org or com. Optouttoday.com. Optouttoday.com. You can get help with all the things, anything you're concerned about from leaving the union. Go to optouttoday.com and they'll help you with that. And they'll make it all super simple for you. So don't passively contribute to the downfall of the country anymore. Leave the union today. Send them an email letting them know why. Because until we get this, the power of the unions under control, by weakening membership, by taking dues away from them, and by sending a message to them that we don't want them to be used to push left-wing ideology on the populace, until that happens, then nothing's going to change. So good for you, Jason, for setting an example. All right, coming up next, Governor Gavin Newsom is coming out against the billionaires tax in California, saying it'll do what? Oh my gosh, lead to capital flight. Exactly what we're saying will happen in Washington state if they pass a millionaires tax. So now we have Governor Gavin Newsom on our side. Probably just because he's running for president, but I don't care what the motivation is because it helps our case. We'll have that coming up next. First, if you are a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, make sure you become a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington today. They can help you navigate this complex world of rules and regulations and now rent control and all that nonsense. And then they're down in Olympia this time of year advocating on your behalf as well. So your dues help with their work in Olympia to try to stop bad bills and bad legislation. But they also can help you on a personal level, one-to-one, if you're going through, you know, any sort of ridiculous situation around squatters or whatever it is. And they can give you advice, make sure you're doing everything legally, lawfully, all your ducks in a row, etc. So rhawa.org, rhawa.org. Washington's trusted resource, empowering housing providers. All right, we have been saying, because common sense tells us, that if you target a population for taxation, there are people within that population who are going to move to avoid that taxation. That is just what happens. It's what happened after Washington State passed a tax on capital gains, and it's already happening in the state of California when it comes to a proposed tax on billionaires. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to do just that. So this isn't a guess, this isn't conjecture. Again, this is what happens. And even Governor Gavin Newsom is admitting that if the proposed 5% one-time tax on billionaires in California passes, it's going to be an economic disaster, continue to be an economic disaster, for the state of California. This from Fox Business. Newsom says California wealth tax is really damaging as billionaires move money and their businesses out of the state. And he is now trying to make sure that the wealth tax is defeated in November. Now, do I trust his motivations and that Gavin Newsom has suddenly come to his senses on overtaxation? No, I think he's trying to find a place for himself in the 2028 presidential contest. But that doesn't mean, you know, even a broken clock is right once a day or twice a day. Twice a day. Thanks, Nicole. I'm really bad with my sayings. Horrible, as you know. Even a broken clock is right twice a day. And he's right on this. And it's because they can't deny it, because they're already seeing it. Several billionaires have already either moved businesses, moved assets, or moved themselves out of California when whispers of this wealth tax began. And that's just what happens. It's what happened when Washington passed its capital gains tax. So here's an interesting thing that happened last Friday in Olympia when I was down there asking questions of elected leaders. So they were asked essentially about the fears if a millionaire's tax passes in Washington state that millionaires will just leave the state and then all this tax revenue that you think you're going to get, you're just not going to get. Here is the answer that Representative Travis Couture gave, a Republican, and listen to the stupid follow-up question asked by a captured reporter in the middle.
The capital flight costs us jobs, costs us innovation. I mean, we're a state built on innovation. We have a large tech sector that, you know, does make incredible amounts of money, but then they turn that money around and give people six-figure jobs with 401ks and healthcare and benefits and everything else. So why would it affect, you know, the rest of us?
Making $900,000 as opposed to $1 million, that's not going to wreck my life enough for me to leave the state if I like living in the state.
I don't think that matches with the evidence of what we see with people who are upset that would be subject to the tax or are already thinking about moving out of this state. And similarly, moving out of California for similar things. And you know what? We're losing 48 taxpayers per day in Washington state. And while states like Florida are gaining somewhere like 400 or 500 taxpayers per day.
John Stang, you're never going to make $1 million doing the kind of reporting you do. I'm sorry to break your heart, sir. But he kept that reporter kept making this argument that, oh, if I have $1 million and I get a 10% tax because I'm a millionaire, that doesn't change my lifestyle at all. He kept saying that over and over as if the only tax that exists on someone who makes $1 million is this possible 10% millionaire's tax. Of course, if you're making $1 million, you're already probably paying about $300,000 in federal taxes, not to mention all the other taxes at the state level. So if you add an additional 10% income tax on millionaires after that, yeah, it all adds up to the point where they're like, I'm just going to take my money elsewhere. And we see this happening. Now, Representative Tim Ormsby, the leading Democrat in the House on the budget issue, in terms of these concerns about capital flight, which are a very real thing, which are already happening in California, he says, what capital flight? There's no such thing.
I have no problem. I can look myself in the mirror and my constituents in the face if we're taxing a certain percentage of over $1 million. And as you pointed out, it is not going to change anyone's lifestyle at that level. I think the idea that we have capital flight, I have not seen any evidence of that whatsoever.
You have not? I'm sitting front row while he's saying that. He goes, I have not seen any evidence. And that was even before the headlines out of California, right? So to give him that, you know, the headlines that started in earnest about billionaires leaving California over their billionaires tax proposal. But I'm sitting there and he's saying that and my mouth's like, what? I was like, what do you mean? Because, of course, I was thinking of the person who you're all thinking of, Jeff Bezos.
You said you've seen no evidence of tax flight or wealth flight. Forbes estimates Jeff Bezos saved $954 million in capital gains taxes by moving to Florida. So what do you mean you've seen no evidence of tax flight?
That's one example. And I believe that if you unpack that, it was for personal reasons, not business reasons or dollar reasons. That's where he originated. He returned home. He built his wealth here in this state because of the infrastructure and ability and technical expertise that we have. My understanding is his situation was personal, not based on tax liability, but for personal reasons.
Yeah, that's why as soon as he left and moved to Florida, he sold a massive amount of Amazon stock and avoided, at this juncture, almost $1 billion in taxes that he would have had to pay us for the capital gains tax. If you believe he only did that for personal reasons, you need a medical exam on your brain. I mean, just crazy. And then how quickly he said, I haven't heard of any instances of capital flight. And I say, what about Jeff Bezos, who saved almost $1 billion? And he says, well, that's one. That's kind of a big one. Our state budget is roughly $78 billion a year, and he accounts for $1 billion in revenue that you expected that you did not get. I would say that's just that one? That's a pretty significant one. So we know capital flight is a real thing. We know it's even, Governor Newsom is saying it's a real thing in California, already happening there under threat of a billionaire tax. So millionaire tax in Washington state, the rich people are the people who can afford to move, and they do it. Even our friend Zach Abraham, I was talking to him yesterday with Bulwark Capital. He said if they pass the millionaire tax, he will find a way to move his business to domicile it elsewhere. So we already know there are people saying, yes, I will leave. Yes, I will move. Yes, I will move my business. And Democrats are like, no, they won't. No, they don't. They won't. And you're going to what? Call their bluff? And then by the time they leave, they're gone. They're gone. They're not going to come back. Even if you say, oh, we changed our mind. Yeah, this has been really bad. A lot of millionaires left. We don't have any money anymore. Now we're going to have to tax the middle class anymore. We're sorry. Please come back. They're not coming back. When you take the steps to move your business, move your family out of a state over their tax policy, you're not just going to say, oh, well, now they're acting friendly, so I'm going to move back. No, when you're gone, you're gone. And Washington State's budget crisis is going to get worse and worse and worse until they figure that out. That segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration, oh, there's so much frustration, into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to get involved in fighting for this state that we all love. Here was an interesting thing. And yes, we're pretty legislative heavy this week because the session just began and there's lots of just crazy stuff happening. So there is this ongoing conversation about potential childcare fraud. And of course, this was sparked by that very viral video out of Minnesota from Nick Shirley, where he went to the Quality Leering Center and leered that it probably wasn't real. And this got independent journalists across the country to start looking into childcare and daycare payments and entities in their states to figure out whether there was any shady business going on there. And as soon as that happened, and there were individuals on the ground here in Washington State doing that, Jonathan Cho, Cam Higby, Carlene Johnson with the Center Square, and they were door knocking on some of these places registered with the state, and there weren't kids there. And look, did they find absolute proof of fraud? No, but any reasonable person watching some of this content they put out would ask themselves, yeah, this looks suspicious. Like they go to a house that was registered with the state and neighbors would say, I've never seen a child there in my life. Like that should be enough for any reasonable person to say, hey, there's some smoke there. We need to look into this. Fraud and investigating fraud should not be controversial. Oh, but because it was a conservative influencer in Minnesota who brought attention to it. Oh, no, we have to just fight back against this notion that there might be fraud there with everything we have. So there was a Democratic leadership press conference yesterday in Olympia. And I will give a couple reporters a lot of credit. So Chris Daniels with Como News has been like a dog on a bone. He will not be bullied out of asking questions about whether we should, as a state, be investigating potential childcare fraud. And I give him credit as a legacy reporter for being willing to do that. And then Carlene Johnson with the Center Square has been very good about continuing to dig into this as well. And there's this thing that happened. There's no denying it. So as soon as independent reporters in our state started to dig into this issue, the state website that lists certain information about childcare providers started to delete certain information about childcare providers. And this is not in dispute because people have the screen captures of the website one day and then the website the next day. Information about like whether the provider, you know, is Somalian or speaks Somalian. That kind of stuff was disappearing. And so the chair of the Washington State Republican Party, Representative Jim Walsh, has raised alarm bells over this. Why are we deleting information from the state website that could help people determine whether there's fraud happening at the childcare facilities? So Chris Daniels, again with Como News, questions the Democratic leadership panel about these allegations of missing information.
Have either of you heard anything about the deletion of records from state websites as it pertains to child care centers?
That seems to be an expertise that the federal government has, not us. I mean, we can always look at those things, but that is something that the federal government is doing over and over and over again. I find these allegations in Washington State, listen, people who just raise the issue of fraud when they have actually no substance behind what it is they're saying, but for people to go out and knock on the door of childcare centers and demand to see kids. I was just having to calm down Representative Stonier about what would have happened if somebody did that with regard to her children. It's a little bit, it just seems like it's, scraping the bottom of the barrel to just raise random allegations of fraud.
I don't think concerns about fraud is scraping the bottom of any barrel. There's $9 billion, maybe more than that, of fraud in Minnesota, much of it perpetrated by the Somali community. Some of the entities there that have been tied to that fraud definitively by a court of law were also caught donating money to members of the Somali community and political candidates from the Somali community in Washington state. Some of the precursors of fraud that were discovered in Minnesota are very similar to some of the things that are happening here. DCYF, the Department of Children, Youth, and Families, acknowledged within the last year $2 million in money that was misused. The state auditor several years ago acknowledged that there is like $500 million that DCYF was not properly accounting for. So it's not just made up. There's enough there by any standard to take a closer look. You should have no issue doing that. And as I said, we're not debating. I'm not here to debate with anyone. The truth in the assertion that there's missing information from the state website on childcare facilities. People have the screenshots. There one day, gone the next day, right around the time independent journalists are starting to look into these centers and starting to visit some of them. So there's some there that any rational person who's not obsessed with their ideology and hating Donald Trump and being angry about Donald Trump, any actual political leader would say, yeah, you know what? Let's look into this. And if there's no fraud, great. Then we can say there's no fraud and everything's fine. But we have auditors that should be able to do this kind of work. So then these Democrats start to lose their ever-loving minds as this conversation, these questions continue. So specifically, Representative Stoner goes off about these reporters who are trying to do the job the state hasn't done and look into these child care facilities to see if they're legitimate.
But I certainly do not want anybody thinking that they can go knocking on a child care center, talking to the people who are caring for those children outside of the regulations that we have in place already, especially given the environment we're in right now. We just got done talking about people getting kidnapped off the streets. Are we serious here?
What does it have to do with anything? What does any of that have to do with anything? And she's saying, can you play that again? Listen very closely to what she's saying. She's basically saying at the beginning, I certainly don't want reporters doing their jobs.
But I certainly do not want anybody thinking that they can go knocking on a child care center, talking to the people who are caring for those children outside of the regulations that we have in place already, especially given the environment we're in right now. We just got done talking about people getting kidnapped off the streets. Are we serious here?
So you're saying that reporters shouldn't be looking into fraud at all. Only the state is going to do it. You shall not go investigate fraud on your own. How dare you? The state will do that. Oh, yeah, the state's been doing such a great job investigating fraud and getting to the bottom of fraud. And have we found the, you know, $500 million that the Nigerians stole from us during COVID yet? I don't think so. So Carlene Johnson, who's been doing that with the Center Square, she has been going to knock on doors. She took great umbrage with the assertion that she somehow was doing something wrong, and good for her, she pushed back.
Well, with all due respect, as one of the reporters who did some door knocking, never demanding to see a child. If anybody demanding to see a kid, that would be highly unusual, I don't think.
I'm glad you agree with that.
Right. And that never happened, that I'm aware of, even on the stuff posted online. But when you do knock on a door, this taxpayer-subsidized child care center that's received hundreds of thousands of dollars over a couple of months' time, there's no evidence of a child care center. As a reporter, I have every right to knock on that door and say, you're getting a heck of a lot of money. Are you actually watching kids? And you've got all
my two kids went to an in-home child care center. The woman who ran it is still to this day called Grandma Cindy by my kids in their 20s. There's not a lock. There's not a gate going up to that front door. All of the regulations in the back for keeping the kids safe is in place. But if you were knocking on that door and I found out about it, I would lose my mind. That is a home. That is a home where a business operates to care for toddlers.
If it's a taxpayer-subsidized daycare, we have every right to knock on the door and say, are you a legit operation?
The Department of Children, Youth, and Families audits all of them every year. Did you report that to the Department of Children, Youth, and Families?
Right.
Or did you write a story about it?
They have performed audits and the findings have not been
writing a story is reporting it.
That I have reported on.
So when you went and knocked on an in-home family child care center, did you report that there was nobody there to the Department of Children, Youth, and Families?
That's not her job.
From DCYF.
No, you said that there was no daycare going on there.
Right, there was no daycare there.
And did you report that to the Department of Children, Youth, and Families so they could follow up?
Absolutely.
Great, well, I look forward to hearing that because they audit every child care center every year and they haven't found the instances of the kind of fraud that has been alleged.
What are they talking about? These people have lost their minds. She's a reporter. Her job is to report. She did a story on it. So yeah, DCYF knows about it, if they care. But you're saying it's the reporter's job to then fill out, what, a form with DCYF? No, she reached out to DCYF for comment. That's the reporter's job. DCYF knows about it. And this assertion that, nope, you are not allowed, I would lose my mind if a reporter tried to investigate whether a child care facility using taxpayer funds is actually taking care of children. So they don't want reporters to look into it because they know what reporters will find. I mean, they totally lost their mind. And here's House Speaker Lori Jenkins on the door knocking issue.
I think, Carlene, what my point is you may have the right to do that. It's not right to do that.
Okay. In your opinion, you know, I don't think that's going to dissuade anyone. And then Senator Monica Dhingra actually makes a point that I agree with about the door knocking debacle.
People in their private homes have a right not to open their front door.
I agree.
Especially to people they don't recognize.
Of course.
And I can't tell you how many times in the last year I have said, please don't let the facts get in the way of your opinions. Can you imagine that in this America? That you have to carry your ID to prove you're a citizen if you go for a walk
what
or a run? Everyone should be appalled and shocked. So yes, having a random person knock on someone's door and expecting them to open the door is completely unacceptable in today's climate.
No one has said that they're expected to open the door. No one. Carlene hasn't. Nick Shirley didn't. No one says, you must open the door for me. I'm a reporter. No, you can say, you can open up the window and say F off. I don't care. I'm going to put that in my story. They opened the window and they told me to F off. But of course we don't believe that they're required to open the door for us because we have some special reporter badge. What are you talking about? In fact, I wouldn't open the door either. I hardly open the door for anyone who comes to my door. I shout through it. I'm like, who are you and what do you want? That's no soliciting, totally fine. So yeah, you don't have to open the door, but that doesn't mean that reporters can't go try to talk to you, get answers about what you're doing with taxpayer money. And if you don't want to give them those answers, that's fine. They can go about it a different way. Gosh, these people are strange. And then, so all of that is so funny because it started with that simple question that Chris Daniels asked. You know, are you aware of them deleting information from the state website? And you just, that's how triggered they got over just that question about something so simple that it turns into this multi-minute anger, you know, lashing out sort of thing. And then poor Chris Daniels, he circles back to the original question.
There's been a filing in Thurston County by your colleague on the Republican side, Jim Walsh, alleging that records have been deleted from state websites. Are you aware of any sort of records getting deleted from state websites?
I'm not aware, and the GOP chair says a lot of things and files a lot of things.
Yeah, so she has to slam Walsh. She could just say, here's what a leader could do. I haven't seen that, but I'll look into it. I'll look into it and get back to you, Chris. But I haven't seen it yet. Is that really so hard? I'm sure she's seen it, though. That would probably be a lie. But just, oh, you're telling me that there's maybe been deletion from state websites. I'm the Speaker of the House. I'll contact DCYF that is run by one of my former House members. And I'll ask her and we'll get an answer to you ASAP, Chris. How does that sound? That's what a regular, normal thinking elected leader would do. But no, she has to just brush off the question, attack Jim Walsh. And to me, doth protest too much. Don't you think? They're so spun up about this line of questioning. Doth protest too much. That to me is an indicator that there's some there. All right, I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll about this issue. And I think this is a tough question. I'm even wrestling with it a little bit. To subscribers on Patreon, Locals, and X, with all of this happening, with the child care fraud assertions and concerns, do you believe that Washington and taxpayers should pay for an outside third-party audit? Nicole, do you have this poll? Outside third-party audit, or do you believe that the state auditor should just look into it? Because we have a state auditor that's elected. Or do you think there's no problems there? I don't think we need to have an audit at all. Nicole, what do you think? Pay for an additional cost for an outside third-party audit, have the state auditor do it, or no audit?
That's hard because I think that the state auditor should be doing it, but we've determined that it's not reliable enough. So I would say outside audit because the what it might save us will outweigh what we spend on it.
Yeah, that's a good point. Depending what they find. I mean, I'd like to give the state auditor a chance because the state auditor did find concerns with DCYF and it not, you know, properly tracking or accounting for money that was going out. And then that $2 million in ill-gotten funds. So, you know, I think that the auditor wants to do that work. But then the issue is the legislature doesn't even listen. It's like, oh, you found this, but oh, well. Kind of. Yeah. But I don't know that an outside auditor would have any more oomph or ability to force them to actually do something. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Maybe at this point, given how much of a hot topic this is and how absolutely confident Democrats are that there's no there, I think I would go with an outside audit because you're probably right. What they'd find might save us money on the back end. Let's see what our dogged subscriber. Oh, I did not expect this. 94% say outside audit.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it'd be a little more split for because the financial element of it. 94% outside audit. Mountain Mama says someone from the feds who has enough balls to take down Washington State. And the feds can audit this money because a lot of this is coming from the federal government. Let's see. Shelley, am I being dramatic when I say I am sickened by the way the state is run? No, I don't think that's dramatic at all. You know what? It's not dramatic enough. Chuck, I voted for outside audit, but the taxpayer should not have to fund it. But then who funds it? If the taxpayer doesn't fund it, who funds it, you know? Kyle, even if our auditors can be impartial, which I doubt, the state has proven it can't be trusted to share information with voters, and it can't be trusted to actually act on information or to claw, you know, clawbacks, for instance. When there is fraud, you know, every effort has to be made to get that money back. And like some of the money got back from the Nigerian scammers during COVID, but certainly not all of it. You know, some of that money. I wonder what it went to. You know, don't you wonder sometimes what Nigerian man is just living his dream life somewhere using his money that he stole from Washington taxpayers? You know what I say? Good for you, sir.
Right.
And good his, for you,
his
sir.
His neighbor's like, dang,
where'd you get all that money? Where'd you get that money? Chris says, an outside auditor would be non-biased or as close to non-biased as you can get. Yeah, I think as close to non-biased as you can get is really all we can hope for at this point. All right, coming up next, there is an effort in Washington State right now to change our three strikes laws to not include strikes that are committed when you're a juvenile. We'll discuss, and there is the granddaughter of a murder victim who has something to say about that and went to Olympia to testify against this bill. First, our friends at Valentine Roofing have been awarded the best roofing company in the Pacific Northwest for not one, not two, 3 years in a row. There's a reason for that. Meticulous cleanup, honest assessments. You know, if they come out and you think you might need a new roof because they got a leak in it, they'll tell you if you need a new roof or if they can just patch that thing up. And if it can get you by for a couple years, because, you know, committing to a new roof is a big expense for homeowners. And so you want to make sure that maybe you don't have to commit to that until it absolutely is necessary. The good thing about Valentine is they also have some really flexible financing options around your budget, including zero down, zero interest in some projects. And so that's great as well. And right now, during this cold season, they're offering 10% off if you bundle attic insulation with any new roof. Because a lot of the roof, 25% of your home's heat can be lost through your attic if it's not properly insulated. So if your furnace is just working overtime, it might be time to call Valentine. They'll come out, do an assessment, give you a free estimate. Call 206-ROOFING, 206-ROOFING. Schedule your free estimate with Valentine Roofing. Make sure that you tell them that you heard about them right here on Undivided. All right, are we doing a double dose of Unbelievable today? Yes, we are. Let's get to the first one. All right. All the things happening this legislative session, and Democrats still have time to push soft on crime bills. And it's just insane sometimes when you look at this is going to be my priority. You know, as a lawmaker, you might have one, two, three bills that really get traction during any given legislative session. All the things happening in the state, and you have lawmakers who their priority is, let's help criminals this session. Let's help criminals get out of prison early, avoid prison altogether. Happens every single year. It's just bewildering to me. Maybe you could, I don't know, this is a really crazy concept, but why not have a bill that helps crime victims? Is that asking too much? Maybe we could have a bill that helps crime victims. Nope, we got to help
or
criminals.
Helps prevent crime, maybe?
Help prevent crime. Oh my gosh, we could.
What a concept.
Let's not go too far. Let's not go too far. So introduce Senate Bill 5945 has to do with three strikes. It says it's an act related to modifying the definition of persistent offender to exclude convictions for offenses committed by someone under the age of 18. So in Washington state, three strikes state, there are certain, you know, particularly serious and violent offenses where if you do it three times or commit a crime on that list three times, you have three strikes, you're out, you spend the rest of your life in prison because you are now considered a persistent offender. And Democrats have for years now been trying to modify that, been trying to take certain crimes off the list of what qualifies as a strike because they just don't want anyone to spend their whole life in prison, even if it's someone who's committed very violent, horrible acts. So you'll remember the case of Ruth Dalton. It's been a while since we talked about this, but as soon as we show you the pictures, you'll be familiar with the case. So she was 80 years old, living in Seattle, working as a dog walker, beloved by her community, and she was killed during a carjacking in the Madison Valley neighborhood. This happened in the summer of 2024. You'll remember her dog Prince was found stabbed to death in a nearby trash can. It's just an absolute horrifying, one of the worst crimes we've ever covered. So the man who killed her was named Jamaad Haynes. He's been charged with her murder, so that case is still ongoing. But the issue at the center of this that I think was so controversial about Jamaad Haynes is he should have been characterized as a persistent offender. He'd been in and out of prison. He killed a guy named Eric Berge in 1993 in Seattle in a drunk driving crash. And then he got, you know, in and out of prison. Ever since then, he committed a robbery in Renton. When he was in prison, he attacked two corrections officers. And so the crimes he committed, he should have been a three-strike offender. But the issue is that he got one of those cases pled down to a charge in a crime that wasn't on the three strikes list. And also, of course, he committed, you know, when he murdered Eric Berge, he was a juvenile. And so here you have someone who throughout his entire life, from 16 and on, has shown that he has a propensity for violence. And that started when he was very young. And it continued, you know, even after the drunk driving fatality, he continued to commit violent crimes against persons up until the point that he killed Ruth Dalton and her dog. Just horrifying. And so someone like Jamaad Haynes is who they're trying to help with this Senate bill, Senate Bill 5945. Someone like Jamaad Haynes, who never strayed from his life of crime ever from 16 and on. So why shouldn't you count a strike when he was a juvenile? That makes no sense. And Ruth Dalton's granddaughter also believes, Melanie, that that makes no sense either. She testified yesterday during the hearing for Senate Bill 5945.
First of all, I want you guys to think if you've ever known anybody who's been impacted by a violent act, drunk driver, assault, rape, murder. Secondly, would it make it okay if the drunk driver, rapist, robber, or murderer was under 18? Would the victim be any less violated, traumatized, or dead? No. So if the outcome is the same for the victim, why is it different for the perpetrators? To those of you who said yes in your heads that you know somebody, I'm sorry, my condolences. And those of you that don't, my extreme envy, because I'm jealous that your life has not been touched by this evil that mine has. My grandmother was killed in August 2024. She was taken from me. She was the 80-year-old dog walker carjacked and killed in Seattle, in Madison Park. That is who I lost. Worldwide news. The person who murdered her is an 8-time felon with a history going back to 91. In 93, he got his first strike when he killed a young man. He pled guilty in Superior Court, and that was his first strike. Now, Eric's family doesn't care about how old Haynes was. They care that their son never reached past 27. He committed robbery in the first in 99, and that was strike two. He dodged strike three by a plea deal, and now here we are in 2026, and he's going on trial for my grandmother's murder. Now, I think that should be strike four, but technically it's strike three, but only if this law is not fast.
Melanie,
passed.
Thank you so much for your testimony.
No.
Well, thank you, ma'am. We have other public testifiers, and we have to give equal time to everybody, and you can submit written testimony. We would love to have you submit that.
Hi there. My name is Tiffany Attrill. I'm a former crime victim advocate. I spent my career serving victims of crime of every imaginable and unimaginable person against person crime. I'd actually like to give my time to Melanie so she can finish her statement.
That's well within your right. Thank you. Go ahead, Melanie.
The only thing that has given me any comfort is that my grandmother's death would be the reason that Haynes spent the rest of his life in prison. If this bill passes, that will not happen. By passing the bill, you are telling Eric's family that his life means less than robbery simply because Haynes was a bit older when he committed that crime. And you are telling me that my only comfort of him spending his life behind bars has to wait for him to do another strike offense. So maybe, sorry, fifth time is the charm with him.
God, that gave me goosebumps. Oh my gosh. Melanie's been so strong, and she's really been just such an advocate ever since her grandmother was killed in such a brutal fashion. And it's sad that she has to go down to Olympia and talk about that and relive it, the emotions of it, because you have some Democrats who want to spend their time in Olympia taking it easy on criminals. Taking it easy on criminals who've committed not one, not two, but at least three of the most heinous crimes that we have on the books in Washington state. It really is quite disgusting that Melanie even has to drag herself down there to go through that and to do that. But good for her. Just another year with Democrats telling us whose side they're on. They're not on the side of crime victims. They're not on the side of law-abiding people. They are on the side of people who hurt others, who break the law, and who should never see the light of day. It's unbelievable. All right, let's get to a double dose of unbelievable. Oh, that's a good one. Oh, poor Katie Wilson, poor socialist mayor. So the worst probably news item out of her entire campaign has come back to haunt her. So as you know, Katie Wilson was exposed as a Nepo baby during her campaign for mayor of Seattle. And that's fine. I'm okay if you're a Nepo baby. I don't care. If your parents built wealth and earned wealth and they passed it along to you, good for you. I'm quite jealous of that. But when you're running as a socialist and saying you hate the rich and the privileged and all of that stuff, and then it turns out that your parents in New York academics, are giving you all this money to pay for childcare for your new child, even though your husband doesn't even have a job, that's just strange, right? But I remember when this story came out and we all thought, I wonder if she's reporting that on her taxes. That was the question for me, because I think the threshold is maybe $10,000 or something, where even if it's a gift to family members, you still have to report it on your taxes. So I was more concerned about the taxes front, but I hadn't even thought about the financial disclosures. When you run as a candidate, there are a slew of financial disclosures that are necessary, and she didn't disclose this. And so now she's being fined for it. Oh, yes, she's being fined for the KOW is probably like, we're so sorry. We didn't mean to get you in trouble, because KOW serves the socialists and the progressives. This is from our friend Jason Rantz at Seattle Red. Seattle Mayor Katie Wilson fined over unreported childcare support during her campaign. She failed to properly report more than $10,000 in, they're considering it, campaign-related expenditures tied to childcare paid for by her parents. A central talking point that was both praised by supporters and criticized by opponents during the race. Because again, she was saying that her parents were helping her with the childcare expenses so she could run the campaign. So it became a childcare expense. It says, in a December 17th, 2025 letter from the Seattle Ethics and Elections Commission obtained by the Jason Rantz Show, the city found that the Wilson for Seattle Committee failed to report more than $10,000 in expenditures made during the campaign, explaining that the payments were a, quote, in-kind contribution from the candidate's parents put toward the candidate's childcare expenses during the campaign. And when you think about it, it does make an awful lot of sense. I mean, she basically told on herself, my parents are nice enough to do this for me so I can run this campaign and my husband can focus on running the campaign with me as well. Well, that becomes an in-kind contribution to your campaign. So what's the punishment here? She has to leave office? Mm-hmm. Is that the punishment? Oh, no. The letter says she gets a $250 penalty. What? $250?
You know, the Seattle Times covered this just a couple of hours ago, I think.
Yeah.
And they make sure to give it the small adjective every time they talk about it. It's a small fine. Small fine.
Yes.
They're very obsessed with it being small.
It is a small fine.
It is small. But I think they're minimizing it by its size.
Yeah.
Right?
$250. Well, she's a socialist, so I'm sure she'll crowdfund the money to pay for the fine, even though she's now making her mayoral salary, which shouldn't she be giving to the working people? Don't you think? You would think, but apparently not.
I mean, if you would like to give more taxes, feel free.
Go for it. Yes, maybe. Go for it. I love that. All right, coming up next, Francis Stout, Tumwater High School athlete who was in Washington, D.C. for the historic SCOTUS hearing, is going to join us to talk about it. First, some great First Mark Challenge success stories. I love to hear these. I've been telling you for years now to take the First Mark Challenge and see if you've got great insurance at the best possible price. Let's check in with some undivided viewers and listeners, shall we? Debbie says First Mark is the absolute best. We're 70 years old and would rather gouge our eyes out than shop insurance companies for all our cars, boat, house, ATVs, etc. One-stop shopping with First Mark. Excellent rates and coverage. Anytime we've had a question or had to make a change, it was addressed and dealt with immediately. So comforting having them in our corner. Highly recommended. Rennell says every single person we've dealt with at First Mark has been absolutely amazing. We get check-ins every 6 months to make sure all is well. I cannot recommend First Mark enough. And I think those check-ins are one of my favorite parts because you're not left wondering, you know, especially if your life is changing or whatever, if you have the right insurance still. They check in proactively and just, you know, say, hey, how's everything going? Anything changing on your end? How's the insurance? All that stuff. And so I love that about First Mark. It really does feel like family. That's why we call it the First Mark family. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies. They always have your best interest in mind, which every company should have your best interest in mind that you do business with. All right. As we said, two of our very brave high school athletes from Washington State were in Washington, D.C. yesterday for the historic SCOTUS hearings on whether girls' sports can be protected. Annalee Wilson, who is a high school track athlete in Wenatchee, and then Francis Stout, who is a high school athlete in Tumwater. And I just thought it was so cool that they got that opportunity to be there and to be around other young women who have been fighting to protect girls' sports and to protect girls' spaces. Francis was about to catch a flight back home earlier, but she spent a couple minutes talking to us about the experience and where she hopes all of this will lead. Francis, hello. You still in D.C.?
Yes, we are about to head back today a little bit later, but we've been here for a little bit of time now. Very fun.
Yeah. What was it like to be outside the Supreme Court with everyone as the arguments were being made?
It was absolutely amazing. I am beyond grateful for especially AFPI for flying me out there and for you guys for making me known, of course, and Let's Go Washington. It was amazing. It's very nerve-wracking kind of thinking about what can kind of go on, but it's rewarding to think that speaking up has gotten me to be able to get that experience and opportunity. Pretty sad seeing the other side of things with some protesters there while we were rallying, but it was an amazing group of people, amazing hearing all these girl stories and getting to talk with them face to face and hear what they've been through as well and know that I'm not alone in this fight.
Yeah. Well, we know in this case, I mean, it depends how the Supreme Court rules, but it won't necessarily change what's happening back here in Washington. You know, if they rule at a very base level, which I think they'll side with sanity, but, you know, it allows states to continue to implement laws to ban boys from participating with girls. Now, our leaders wouldn't do such a thing, you know, unless voters, of course, force them to. But I don't know to the extent to which you've been able to pay attention to what's happening here. You know, I got a chance to question Governor Bob Ferguson about whether he'd, mm-hmm. have you seen that clip, whether he'd allow his or want his girl to participate or to have to compete against boys.
Would you support a biological boy competing against your own child?
Oh, Brandy, forgot. Look, I understand your obsession.
With what?
With trans kids. And so what I would say is that, yeah, obsession. And so what I would say is, look, we live in a world right now where trans kids are going through a lot, okay? And so, you know, I want to support trans kids. We have a federal government that essentially wants to erase that community. I'm diametrically opposed to that. So appreciate the question, but I'm ready for the next one.
Can you give a yes or no on it?
Next question.
What do you make of just the way that Democrats are sort of framing the conversation and almost vilifying people who question whether boys should compete against girls?
Well, I think that we have some very out-of-touch politicians right now running our state of Washington. I think that they're lying to us and saying that it isn't going on. And I think that calling you obsessed with trans kids is pretty crazy, considering that I'm standing up for a very similar thing. And what does that make me? If he's calling you obsessed, then I'd like to know if he thinks I am as well, because I'm obsessed with protecting myself. And that's, I'll say that. I think that it is pretty crazy to think about how that is who is in head of the state right now. And I do know that they're going to do everything in their power to not follow along with certain things like that, because they don't care. They are not here to protect the girls of Washington State. They are completely going against them and silencing their voices. I think that it is disappointing that we have voted them into being the head of Washington. I think that's pretty sad, but it is crazy thinking that they could have the audacity to say something like that and try and keep a straight face while saying it.
I know that you have made efforts, and other female athletes in our state have made efforts to try to get meetings with elected leaders like Chris Reichdahl, like the governor. Mm-hmm. Are you still open to that, if they would be willing to meet with you and hear your concerns on this issue?
Very much so. I'm still asking. I want to, I can make time with a very busy schedule. I have basketball and other sports going on, school. If I can make time, they can too. I want to have a face-to-face conversation with them and have them call me a liar to my face. I want to see that happen, because if they feel very comfortable doing it over to the press and over screen. So I'd like to see what they have to say to me and listen to my story and listen to other girls' stories and still tell me that it isn't happening and maybe get a conversation out of it. I'd like the news outlets and media in Washington to be able to cover that. So my offer still stands today and every day.
Well, I love that. Well, like you said, let's see if Governor Ferguson would tell you to your face that you're obsessed mm-hmm. with trans kids. Something tells
yeah,
me
I'd like
you
to see that.
Be so brave. All right, mm-hmm. Frances. Well, I'm so glad you got to go and experience that and be a voice for so many young women in Washington State
Thank you.
And across the country. Keep it up.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it and this opportunity. Thank you very much.
I love those girls. Frances has gotten so sassy. I love it. She's so confident in her opinions and stuff. And I just think it's great. And it's true. I mean, when he talks down to me, when Governor Ferguson talks down to me and calls me obsessed with trans kids for asking a very legitimate question, how would he speak to Frances? You know, she's, I don't know how old his daughter is, but I think they're similar in age.
He mentioned yesterday that she leaves for college this year,
yeah, so she just graduated. Yeah, mm-hmm. So not too far off. And it's like, can you really tell these girls to their faces that they should have to play against boys? Can you do that? Are you brave enough to do it? If you believe in your position enough, why wouldn't you do it? Why won't you take a meeting with girls like Frances and Annalie, who want to talk to you about how they've had to play against boys, be in locker rooms with boys? Annalie lost a state title to a boy. And so, you know, I think he won't do it because he's ashamed of himself. Honestly, I think he won't do it because he's ashamed of himself. And he knows that as a father, he can't sit across from those girls and tell them they should just deal with it. All right, we'll get to your comments coming up next. First, are you thinking about selling your home in 2026, abandoning the insanity of Washington State? Well, I'll be sad to lose you, but you could at least, you know, do us a solid on your way out and work with our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. And Wes is great. I mean, he really is the best in the business, and he's been doing it for a long time through all the market ups and downs. And that's because he gets exceptional results for his clients, no matter what the market is doing. And he really does a good job with homes that, you know, he's worked with people in some difficult situations, you know, people who are trying to sell a family member's home from out of state, or who have already moved because they just couldn't wait. And then you have the stress of trying to sell your home when you've already moved. Mark B says, all I can say is it was such a smooth experience with Wes and just what I was hoping for. We had to sell my mom's house and it needed a little bit of prep, new carpet, paint, yard work. None of us lived nearby, and Wes and his team took care of it all. We got asking price and it sold the first weekend, 5 stars. So it's really about taking stress off of you, whether it's the stress of just not having to deal with it at all, or even the financial stress. You know, if you know you need some cosmetic upgrades and you're like, I don't want to pay for that. Well, Wes can arrange it so you don't have to pay for those upgrades until closing. And he's only going to recommend the ones that he thinks you're going to get the value back on the back end. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. All right. Comments from the live stream on the governor's State of the State address. What did I say the State of the State was?
What did you say it was?
What was my delusional?
Oh, delusional.
Delusional. Yes, I wonder what word would you use to describe the State of the State?
Oh, I just had a scary picture of him being the president, giving the State of the Union.
No, don't be silly. Scary stuff. Allison Griffin, so they talk about how the lower class pays most of the taxes, but even in raising a tax on the rich, still no talks of lowering the tax on hurting families. Well, some of them are saying, you know, he suggested that would have to be, you know, combined with a decrease in the B&O tax, but nobody's promising it. And they're not going to do that. You think they're going to do that in a budget crisis? Of course they're not. Salty, I'd like to know how much Bobby's worth and how much he doesn't pay. Yeah, I don't know how much Bobby, old Bobby Ferguson. I know he lives in a very modest house in Seattle. I've been to his house before because I did an interview with him in TV in his kitchen. Or his dining room. So I've been to his house, very modest house in Seattle, although even a very modest house in Seattle is worth quite a bit of money. And then I know he has a family house elsewhere, which I won't say where it is, but the property records are public. The last Robespierre, those leaders just admitted to not giving an S-H-I-T about the future. You know what has convinced me to stop swearing as much?
Oh, what?
Watching the mayor of Minneapolis tell ICE to stay the F out and like dropping the F bomb, I was like, wow, nobody sounds cool swearing. Not even me.
I ran into a sponsor last night and they were like, wow, Brandy's swearing a lot.
Who is it?
Dave Taylor, First Mark. I ran into
you
him
didn't
and his
tell
wife.
Me?
I know. I didn't have time yet today to tell you, but
gosh.
I went to the Paramount to my grandma, my mom, my aunts, everybody to this Neil Diamond play.
Dave Taylor with First Mark is a very straight-laced man.
He didn't complain. He didn't complain. Well, I mean, I don't know.
Dave.
He just said, wow, Brandy's been real riled up lately.
Swearing a lot. I'm sorry, Dave Taylor with First Mark Insurance. I watched Jacob Frey. Swear like that. And I was like, ew. And I'm like, is that what I sound like when I swear? But his was very planned out. It was like, I'm going to drop this line. So you know what? Yes. I'm just going to try to swear less again. Yeah. I'm going to get back to doing that. Because
I'm a grown, is one thing. The
I'm S a grown
word
adult.
Just kind of sometimes falls out.
Yeah, it does. Falls out as it should. Okay, Rick. Well, I was talking about stripping and boob jobs yesterday. Dave Taylor probably didn't like that either. Sorry, Dave. Rick, he doesn't support it until he does. Stop being mean and asking. Wow, it's good that so many of our viewers use First Mark, because even if I swore, Dave would still keep advertising, I hope. Rick Eckert, he doesn't support it until he does. Stop being mean and asking questions, Brandy. Yeah, I'm a jerk. Tom Boosie, cognitive dissidence, the most evil Karen COVID mastards are now anti-mask. Karen COVID mastards, got it. Government employees union siding with protesters. Matthew Cook, I'm anti-ice when it comes to top shelf bourbon. Yes. No ice on the bourbon. That was funny. Grant Roberts, funny how they want ID for ICE, but not to vote in an election. Yes, they love ID for all sorts of things, just not voting. That is one thing. Will the millionaires
they
leave?
Also like science, and except for when it comes to scientific
boys.
Things,
boys
being different than girls.
You guys are on one today. Let me see. Will the millionaires leave? Bill Biz with a $20 super chat. Legislators must think that millionaires can't afford to move. Well, if you tax them enough, they won't be able to afford to move. On the Democrats getting defensive when confronted about just the possibility that there's childcare fraud. Sharon Barber, if you have the facts, pound the facts. If you have nothing, pound the table. Yep, that's what they're doing. The angrier they get, doth protest too much. Midnight, let's just watch the S show unfold when the state loses all its federal money. Well, now, and we'll talk about this tomorrow, the president is once again re-upping the threat to take money from sanctuary cities. Mm-hmm. And he's threatened that before, so that's why I'm not like, oh my God, because it hasn't happened yet, so I don't know.
Well, it keeps getting thrown out in courts or blocked by the courts.
Yeah. So. Shasho Windfeather, the left should want to stop all fraud and abuse because they're always for these programs. So why are they, again, that's a good point. You're for the program. And you say we need these programs, so you shouldn't want it to be defrauded because then it's not helping the people that it's supposed to help. What's the big problem? On the bill excluding minors from the three strikes law, Matt, three strikes and you're out of prison. Yes.
Apparently.
You guys are funny today. looking up for Jesus, how much blood does the state have on its hands before judgment comes? Damn. On Mayor Wilson being fined for her unreported child care, Late Night with Tina says Katie is rapidly gaining national attention and it's all negative. Yeah,
it is. I keep seeing things.
Yeah. John Calvin, $250, a slap on her wrist. She'll be the next millionaire in 4 years. Yeah, I'm sure. And then old commie Mamdani moving into the Gracie Mansion. Did you hear what he said is the first changes he wants to make to the Gracie Mansion?
No.
He wants to have bidets installed.
What?
Is there a more bougie thing than a bidet? Yes.
Yes. You're for the people and you don't.
And
like,
he called it.
Nobody
called
should have it, anything more than anyone else. And like, I need a bidet.
And he called it aspirational. And he kind of laughed. Get it? Aspirational.
O-M.
I mean, good gosh. Okay, a couple other super chats to get an adorable deplorable. This is nice. So Papa Woody gave me $2 for my prayers for lucky fund, which it is criminal how much it costs to get a surgery for your dog. It is absolutely criminal. I mean, I am blessed to be able to afford the surgery that she needed on her leg, but that is insane.
That's why you get insurance like me.
Should have done it.
My cats.
I should have known with Lucky. She's accident prone.
She kind of is.
Adorable Deplorable said, how was surgery for your kid? I should have pulled a picture. It's fine. Surgery was great. We love our vet. They took great care of her. It is so sad to see her in this state. So drugged up. So she tore something in her knee. And so she's, you know, got shaved on that whole leg. And then one of those little inflatable donuts around her neck and this sleeve on her leg. And she's just like a lump of skin and flesh right now because she can't really move because she's so drugged up. And just seeing my sweet husband. So I really shouldn't be here today. I should have taken the day off. She's that messed up. Mm-hmm. But my husband agreed to take the day off. He took today off. He's taking tomorrow off because mm-hmm. she just can't do anything on her own. And just to see him, I walk down. He's going to kill me for sharing this story. I took a picture, but I won't share that picture publicly. So I walked down this morning. He let me because I hadn't slept the night before with Lucky because mm-hmm. she was so medicated and she was just out of it. And so I didn't sleep at all. Two nights ago.
Tuesday night.
Oh, so he's Monday like, you know, night. I'll take the day off. I'll take tomorrow off and you go upstairs and you sleep. And he like slept on the couch, mm-hmm. you know, so he could be by her. And I walked down this morning. Oh my God, my husband, how did I find such a good man? He is such a good man. So we get this little like 4 foot, 3 foot by three, 4 foot by 4 foot sort
like
of fence,
gate.
Right? Baby gate thing. So she can't move around. My husband's sitting in the gate, cross-legged this morning, hand feeding her. Oh. And she's, you know, laying, she can't get up. So she's just her head. And he's just hand feeding her little snacks with a little donut on. And I just stood there and watched. And I'm like, how did I find such a good man?
Ellensburg Rodeo. If anybody's
amen,
looking.
Amen. The Ellensburg Rodeo. Yes. Anyway, Lucky is rough right now. But, you know, she's going to get better. Thank you for asking. Mm-hmm. All right. Oh, now I'm going to cry. I just feel
picture,
so bad for you. It was so
you
sad
sent me
picking
a couple
her
pictures.
I know. It was just, she's real rough. Okay. We'll get to a good laughable. No, it's not a laughable. We switched it. Sorry. Very serious. Closing sanity check. Sorry. Thought I was going to improve things. First, are we in a tech bubble? Are we in an AI bubble? Are you concerned about how your retirement portfolio is doing with AI and everything that's happening? If the answer is yes, I'm not sure. I don't know. Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark are having a New Year Reset live webinar on January 29th at 3:30 p.m. Pacific. So it's a good opportunity for you to just dip your toe in, see what Bulwark's all about. Zach will discuss the impact AI could have on the 2026 market, how Bulwark Capital is focused on risk management, and how they incorporate value-based principles in managing retirement portfolios. Plus, he'll do a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So register now for the free New Year Reset live webinar. It's happening January 29th. You can do that at knowyourriskpodcast.com. And while you're there, you can do a few things. You can get more of a one-on-one experience by getting a free Know Your Risk portfolio review. And you can sign up for Zach's daily market recap, all of it at knowyourriskpodcast.com, knowyourriskpodcast.com. And a new episode of Swamp Watch with Zach Abraham is coming out tomorrow night. Yes, Thursday night. So be prepared for that. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. So the father-in-law of the woman who was shot and killed by ICE in Minneapolis did an interview with CNN. And I saw some news coming out that he was a Trump supporter, was a Trump voter. And I think that the left media really believed that this would be sort of a gotcha moment for Trump, that this father-in-law would come out, voted for Trump, and would denounce what Trump did, would denounce the immigration enforcement efforts. But he didn't do that. I don't think this interview went quite how CNN thought it would go. Here's a clip.
I want to ask you about this. You know, when you talk about the confusion, and you've been open, obviously, about your support for the president, when you look at the videos of what happened, and I'm sure they're very hard for you, Timmy, to watch if you've even been able to. But the deputy attorney general says that the Justice Department doesn't believe that there's evidence to back a criminal investigation, right? And no, nothing about charges or anything like that, just an investigation into what happened in terms of the ICE agent's actions. But they were, according to the prosecutors resigning today, pressuring them to investigate Renee's actions and Becca, her wife's actions. How do you feel about all that?
Well, you know, I'm not blaming anybody. I mean, it's a hard situation all the way around. It's hard for the, you know, for everybody involved. I mean, the ICE agent, you know, at first I didn't see the footage where, you know, he was actually, you know, he was actually being ran. I mean, I seen the bump of the car hitting his legs. And so in a flash like that, it's hard to say how you would react. From my understanding that he had been through that before, maybe dragged or something. And so, you know, like I said, it's just a hard situation for everybody. You know, Becca, you know, it's she's a great person as well. I mean, you know, I don't have any enemies. I love everybody. And that's what the Bible tells us, love our neighbors as we love ourselves. But, you know, I think there's some bad choices. And the word says, for the wrath of God will come upon the children of disobedience. And, you know, I don't blame us. I don't blame Rebecca. I don't blame Renee. I just wish that, you know, if we're walking in the Spirit of God, I don't think she would have been there.
Yeah. If someone like that, who lost someone he loved, can be so reasonable when he discusses this issue, then I believe every single one of us has the capacity to be that reasonable when we discuss this issue. And I wish more people would utilize that capacity that they have. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your warm wishes about my doggie. I shall pass them along in the form of kisses and boops to her nose. That has been today's episode of Undivided. As much as I do not want to be here tomorrow because I want to be at home with my dog, I love you guys, but I am really sad. However, I am going to be here tomorrow, and I will do it with a smile on my face. And we'll have a great show tomorrow. Lots to discuss. If you'd like to support our show, we can't do it without paid subscribers. Go to undividedpod.com, and you just click on the banner that's there that says support the show. And you might have been freeloading for 4 years now and thought, you know, today's the day, Brandy. Today is the day that I'm going to pay up, and I'm going to support this mission and this movement. And I love that for you. I love that for us, really. All right, we'll see you here. Same time. Same place. Toodaloo.